Welcome to the Conference on Understanding the Housing Crisis, which is being jointly sponsored by the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston and our friends from across the river, the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Judging by the turnout today, we've hit upon a topic that is both timely and important. There's a lot of interest in what went wrong, which decision makers were responsible, and what we can learn from these mistakes. And as conference organizers, we're confident that we have brought together speakers who are well-positioned to tackle these difficult issues. My name is Yolanda Kujitsky. I'm Vice President and Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, and 2 months ago, I became the Director of the New England Public Policy Center here. I'll start things off with a few words of introduction about the New England Public Policy Center, and how it fits into the research and public policy activities here at the Fed. Now, as many of you in the room know, the Boston Fed has a long tradition of providing support to the New England public policy community. 5 years ago, the bank established the New England Public Policy Center to institutionalize and reinvigorate this support. The mission of the Public Policy Center is to promote better public policy in New England. We do this by conducting objective, nonpartisan, high-quality research on economic and policy issues that are of broad concern throughout the six-state New England region. And when appropriate, the Policy Center works with partners outside the Federal Reserve to act upon our research findings. So in other words, we strive to take the conclusions from our analysis, translate them into viable policy options, and then engage in a dialogue with public officials and other leaders about how to inject economics into real decisions that affect the lives of New Englanders. And since the mayor is here, I'd like to just note, I've had a lot of training as an economist, but I always remember that the reading, writing, and arithmetic I learned came from 12 years in the Boston Public Schools. And so when I talk about, the people out there in New England, it's my classmates, wherever they are now, their families, their neighbors. And I try to inject that into everything that the Public Policy Center does. The Policy Center has two primary areas of focus, labor markets and state and local public finance. In addition to these topics, we keep an eye out for other regional issues where our research and analysis can further advance the overall mission of the Federal Reserve, which is to promote sound growth and financial stability. And certainly gaining a better understanding of the housing collapse and working with policymakers to mitigate its adverse impacts and minimize the likelihood of a repeat occurrence, these fall squarely within our purview. Today's conference builds on earlier work performed at the Policy Center. Our researchers have analyzed the effects of high housing costs on various segments of the New England population. We've looked into whether young professionals can afford to buy a home in New England, and we've documented the heavy burdens of high housing costs and limited supply of affordable housing on lower income households in our region. And later today, you'll hear an update of this research from our senior economist, Alicia Sasser, who will be presenting an overview of current conditions in the New England housing markets. The New England Public Policy Center is part of the bank's research department. And the basic job of the research department is to provide economic analysis and policy advice to Federal Reserve decision makers. It also conducts innovative research on a wide variety of topics, economic, financial, behavioral, to further our understanding of the global and the U.S. economies. This morning, you'll hear a presentation by Paul Willen, senior economist and policy advisor from the bank's research department, on the origins of the housing conference. Now, Paul's work on this topic actually started about 3 years ago when he was briefing the Boston Fed president on developments in the subprime market, and these had a direct impact on monetary policy, the direct implications for monetary policy. And I think that's the hallmark of the finest research that goes on here, It's motivated by developments in the economy that policymakers need to understand and to react to in real time. And eventually it develops into deep and rigorous inquiry that informs policy decisions over the long haul. Our next speaker, the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston president, is fond of saying that the causes of the housing crisis will spark PhD dissertations for the next century, just as the causes of the Great Depression still are debated among scholars today. Today, we have the privilege of hearing from a series of speakers whose insights will guide this scholarly work for decades. But maybe more tangibly, we get to hear from speakers whose daily responsibilities over the last several years have been shaped by the housing crisis and who are leading us in developing solutions on both the national and the local levels. So please join me in welcoming our first speaker, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, Eric Rosengren.
Thank you, Johan. Can everybody hear me okay with the mic? So thank you very much, Yolanda. The Boston Fed has done a lot of research over the last 3 years on real estate type of issues. A lot of the research not only has been useful for thinking about what we should be doing in monetary policy, but has helped inform us on some of the other things we do. We have a consumer affairs department that goes out to the community, looks at community development, looks at what's happening around the region with real estate. And in fact, that group was one of the first to highlight that there was a real subprime issue that we needed to focus on. We've done a lot of really good research. You're going to be seeing some of that research over the course of this morning. Chris Foote, Paul Willen, and others in the research department, the New England Public Policy Center, have been very active at thinking about what the causes of the problems that we've been facing over the last 3 years, but also some of the solutions. The research department has also been very active in thinking about proposals on what we can do about some of the subprime issues. So it is an area that the Boston Fed has been very focused on and will continue to be focused on. This morning, in my brief comments, I want to highlight a perspective from a policymaker. So you're going to be hearing this morning from people who have a lot more time to do research than I've had over the last 3 years. But I want to highlight some of the public policy issues that I think are particularly relevant. And frequently, housing issues focus on the micro level, so I'm actually going to talk mostly at the macro level. So this first chart just shows you what happened in Japan. So when you look at a price index, you don't want something to look like Mount Fuji. And unfortunately, the Japanese land prices look a lot like Mount Fuji. So they had both a big run up and they had a big run down. And for a long time, it was viewed as an anomaly, a public policy issue maybe. It's the second largest economy in the world. But I don't think it got nearly as much focus because it was distinctively Japanese and people didn't take some of the lessons from Japan, particularly the lesson that when real estate values go down, it has a broader impact on the economy. So this just shows you the Japanese core prices, and not only was the real economy weak over a two-decade period, but you can see over the last decade they've actually had falling prices. So it's not just land prices that have been going down, it's not just real estate prices that have gone down. It had a fundamental impact on the entire economy. They had problems in the banking sector. They have problems with the government debt. All the kinds of problems that we're talking about now are problems that the Japanese have been facing. And unfortunately, they've been facing it over a two-decade period, which just highlights that when collateral values go down very substantially, the ability to recover from that is quite, quite difficult, so that you have to really pay attention to the topic of this conference. U.S. real estate prices have also shown both a dramatic increase and a dramatic decrease. Fortunately, it doesn't look quite like Mount Fuji. The decline hasn't been nearly as substantial as what happened in Japan, at least as of yet, and there has been some stabilization over the last couple of quarters. Nonetheless, it's something that we definitely have to worry about, and I would just highlight that I think this has also had a very significant macroeconomic effect. So you can see this is recession shading in this chart. And the first thing to notice is the width of the shading is quite wide for this period. So we've had a very long recession by historical standards. And while the unemployment rate hasn't been a peak for the chart, though it's pretty close to it, I would highlight from where it started, there's a very sharp increase in the unemployment rate that really is quite dramatic. Now, there are lots of things going on besides what was happening in real estate markets, but I think real estate markets were a key player in why we've had such a severe recession and why many people are forecasting a very slow recovery. So with that as background, some policy questions. One of the first questions I think that's important to address is how important has monetary policy been for the kind of run-up that we saw in real estate prices? Many have contended that the short-term interest rates that were very low in the middle of this decade was a significant contributor. I've always been a little bit skeptical that 100 basis point movement in the Fed funds rate is likely to have dramatic impacts on asset prices. But nonetheless, it is an issue that I think is very important for researchers to understand. How does monetary policy potentially trigger an asset bubble? A second area that I think is critically important is what is the role of some of the financial innovations that were occurring at the outset of some of this run-up. So we had a subprime market that became much more developed in the beginning of this decade. We also had securitization that was responsible for making it much easier to take real estate loans off the balance sheet. Was that an important contributor? The first one looks at kind of what is the cost of getting financing. The second one looks more at what is the availability of financing. So how important are the cost and the availability of financing to real estate or other sectors for asset bubbles? And then this third bullet just highlights supervisory or tax policy. If you think that a market's becoming overheated, you don't necessarily have to use monetary policy. You could use supervisory policy. So certainly lending standards is one area that we could focus on. But also tax policy. Real estate has been an area that has benefited from the tax code in a number of different ways. And presumably, if you think that the market is running up very quickly, one option, if everybody observes it and thinks it's of a concern, is to change some of the beneficial tax policies. Similarly, on the way down, you might think that you could use a countercyclical policy. That could be monetary policy. That could be supervisory policy. It could also be tax policy as well. So hopefully that's something that will be discussed a little bit over the course of the morning. Now, one of the striking things in this crisis was how our macroeconomic models were really not up to the task for the kind of crisis that we had. So if you ask most economists 3 years ago, what is the likelihood, or I may make it 4 or 5 years ago, what is the likelihood that national house prices actually go down and go down significantly, they would have put a very small probability on that. Obviously, we've had an outcome that indicates that it was a higher probability than many people thought. That alone has created a lot of problems, because if people have common assumptions and those common assumptions turn out to be incorrect, it creates a real problem for financial markets, and that's certainly something that has been exhibited. But most of our models that we use, both at the Fed but also in the private sector, did not have a well-developed financial sector. Most of them did not have a well-developed residential investment sector or commercial real estate sector. They'll have equations that tend to have a few variables in it, but it's not well enough developed to capture the kinds of problems that we've exhibited over the last couple of years. Also, we haven't had the kind of decline in real estate prices that would affect consumers. There's a great deal of uncertainty about how much spending is going to occur in the future, because we haven't had a shock like this in terms of people realizing that their house is valued very differently than it was just a few years ago. These indirect effects, I think, are very important. They're very hard to measure, and unfortunately, we only have a few episodes to look at to really try to quantify that. So it is difficult to really be able to do this with any kind of statistical precision, but nonetheless, I think it's something we have to work to do a lot better. The next area that I think is really important for the trade-offs for policymakers is that one option is just to require people to have much larger down payments. But there is a cost to having very large down payments. It means that some people may never be able to buy a house. So what is the right percentage for a down payment? Is it 20%? Is it 30%? Is it 10%? Those decisions affect what the probability of default is when you have a recession, but they also affect the ability of who's actually going to be able to afford a house. So policymakers have to wrestle with what is the right calibration. How often are these kind of recessions that are going to hit, and what does that mean for the ability of low and moderate income borrowers to actually get access to credit and be able to purchase a house? And then I would highlight that a number of the non-standard fiscal and monetary policies are in the process of being withdrawn. So the tax credit has just ended. The Federal Reserve bought $1.25 trillion in mortgage-backed securities. We've ended that program as of the end of March. So how important were those programs in actually causing the stabilization in the housing market? Are there other factors? There certainly are, but how important were these factors in contributing to the stabilization we've seen to date? And what does that mean for future policies if we have a similar crisis in the future? Obviously, I have a lot of questions, so sorry to inundate you with questions, but it does highlight as policymakers we have to think about this. One of the striking things about regulatory reform is that Freddie and Fannie really aren't addressed in the regulatory reform. So obviously, it was an important component of what's happened over the last decade. It's obviously something that has to be addressed, but it hasn't been addressed yet. The FHA is an organization that ideally would be really important during these times. What is the role of the FHA in this crisis? What is the role of the FHA going forward? And mortgage foreclosure mitigation is something we've had several foreclosure events that the Boston Fed has co-sponsored with other organizations. We've seen a lot of mitigation activity, but some of the results, I think, have been uneven. So what can we do a better job of dealing with mortgage foreclosures when you do have the kind of shock that we've just had? And finally, New England's fared much better than the rest of the country, but Canada's fared better than we have. So what is it about some of the institutional details that we see abroad that not everybody has seen the same boom and bust, not everybody has had the same contagion to the financial sector? So I think there are lessons to be learned as we go forward from some of the countries that are very similar to ourselves but didn't go through the same kind of problems that we've encountered. I think over the course of this morning we're going to hear a lot about research, but I think a very important part of this, and it's something that Yolanda highlighted in her remarks, is it's really important to take the research and actually make it implementable. And so that is that not only do we do the research papers, but we're not done when we put it up on the website. It's very important to get to people that are setting tax policy, people like the mayor that are very active and worrying about foreclosure problems in the city of Boston, and for monetary policy as well. So it's very important that the kinds of results that we find at a conference like this get transmitted more broadly, and I think that's one of the advantages of having this type of conference. So with that as an outset, I'd like to highlight that the mayor of Boston has really played a critical role in thinking about how to implement policies. When I first came on as president of the Boston Fed, right as the crisis started, the mayor was already very active in thinking about foreclosure problems, thinking about how they could do mitigation, particularly in hard-hit neighborhoods. He was very innovative in thinking about neighborhood solutions, and I think that he's had a lot of insight, some of which has benefited from the types of research done by people in this audience. So I think he's very well situated to talk about some of the experience that he's had as a policymaker in thinking about what's happened in the real estate crisis. So I'd like to welcome the mayor of Boston, Thomas Menino.
Yeah. Good morning. Thank you, Eric, for those comments, and thank you for your leadership over the last few years. And when this mortgage crisis started, Eric just started at the Fed. He was my most frequent phone call. Ask him, what do we do? He was very helpful. And for all of you this morning, thank you for being interested in an issue that has not been on the front burner for a few years, except for the foreclosure issue. I can remember I was president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors a couple of years ago. I made housing my issue for the 2 years I was president, and the executive director said, is this boring or what? Housing. It's not an issue that gets a lot of headlines, but it's an issue that's so important to our economy, so important to our families, so important to the neighborhoods of America. That's why I took on the issue, and I thank all of you for being the Kennedy School, the Rappaport part of it, and I thank them for part of this. And I want to say that thank you all, and I believe this type of collaboration we have this morning will help us improve our neighborhoods and deliver better results for the people of our city, our state, and our country. How many of you ride a bike? Not bad. I love riding my bike. I just got clearance from the doctor to go back on it yesterday. The best thing about biking is this. When you are on your bike, you have to keep looking forward, right? Otherwise, you miss what might be coming next. I say this to show how I am approaching the foreclosure issue. I am looking forward. While I am angry with the irresponsible behavior that caused this problem, I believe there should be strong regulations for lenders. I will get to that later. I believe we must channel this passion into finding solutions to strengthen neighborhoods and help people. So this morning, I want to talk about what we should do to strengthen the housing market across Boston. Thankfully, Boston's in a pretty good position. While many cities are setting records for foreclosures, Boston is setting records for preventing foreclosures. We started early, had some real results to show. Our Don't Borrow Trouble program has been helping homeowners avoid bad loans since 1999. The 5,100 home buyers who got their financing through our program have a foreclosure rate one-third the rate of the open market. In 2006, we set up a network of foreclosure prevention providers. Last month, we saved 1,000 homeowners from foreclosure. And at 1.31%, the Boston metro area foreclosure rate is 110th among the nation's top metro areas. These are real great things. I want to thank my housing team for the outstanding work. The stats I just cited reflect the high caliber people we have in city government working on these issues. We still have a long way to go to improve the housing market in Boston. I want to focus on three areas: an increase in responsible lending, getting real estate-owned properties into thoughtful hands at a faster rate, and stronger regulations of the mortgage industry. I'll start with lending. We need more responsible lending from banks. In a matter of months, we have gone from the days of too easy credit to the days of nearly impossible credit for home buyers. Right now, only 25% of people apply for home buyers' financial assistance programs are able to actually close on a mortgage. Just a year ago, 39% were able to get a loan. We need really to strike, I think, a better balance. There are a lot of families out there who want to invest in a home in our city, but they still can't buy. Instead of being priced out, now they're being frozen out. It shouldn't be this way. From education to financing, we are taking action at the city level. But we need some help. The banks need to lend to these hardworking homeowners so we can strengthen neighborhoods and get more home buyers back in the market. I want the banks to making money in Boston to invest in Boston. That's why I'm calling for all banks in our city, both large and small, to issue quarterly mortgage reports so everyone can see how much they are lending in our city. There's a bank in the city that is going through an expansion program now. So, Mayor, we need your help. I said, how many mortgages are you giving? Oh, we don't do that business. I said, yeah, you just do what you make your money on. I want you to invest in Boston before you get my help to expand. We've got to get them back in the business. I believe this information will help us to reach a second middle ground, a sound middle ground that's good for banks and good for the neighborhoods of Boston. The second thing we need to do is strengthen the market to get the REOs into thoughtful hands for redevelopment more quickly. Right now we have 866 REOs in our city. These properties are often badly neglected during the lengthy foreclosure process, end up boarded up once the bank takes possession. Instead of welcoming a new family into the neighborhood, REOs invite vandalism and crime, depressing the property values for everyone living nearby. I believe there should be priority given to first-time home buyers and nonprofits with a solid track record of neighborhood development. It shouldn't just be about the highest bid. It should be about what's best for the neighborhoods. We've seen more how this type of process can work on Henry Street in Dorchester. Many know of our success there. It's time for the banks to get the REOs into responsible hands more quickly, not just to benefit the individual houses, but the surrounding community. Now let's look at the stronger regulations of the mortgage industry. Let's be clear right from the start. People who defrauded, tricked, and lied to get bad loans deserve the harshest punishment under the law. They have decimated some neighborhoods, and that is unacceptable. I have testified numerous times at the State House in favor of stronger fines and stiffer punishment for unscrupulous lenders. That's why I was glad the Massachusetts Senate passed legislation designed to punish irresponsible behavior and prevent these institutions and situations from happening. I urge the House to follow the Senate's lead and the governor to sign this bill into law immediately. As we continue to reform this industry at the state and national level, let's keep building strong communities at the forefront of the debate. Yes, we need to take into consideration the economy, the borrowers, and the industry. But future regulations need to be completed in such a way that builds strong and healthy neighborhoods. Perhaps we had the mindset before, we wouldn't be facing the challenges we do today. Let me close by saying this. The work ahead is not easy. But I believe if the banks increase their responsible lending, if we accelerate the redevelopment of REO properties by community stakeholders, we have the tough regulations in place, we can strengthen Boston's housing market and build better communities. I thank you for the opportunity today to really, the good work a lot of you folks are doing every day. I look forward to working together to improve neighborhoods. And I just want to say that this housing issue is something that some of our neighborhoods are being decimated because of those properties are staying vacant for so long. We've got to get them back online as quickly as possible. I always say to my staff, why am I in the real estate business? We shouldn't own any foreclosed property. Get it out, get a buyer. But the problem is when we try to buy it's tough to get a mortgage. You know, it's not just banks, it's the credit unions also. They understand they have their obligation. We're all in this together. It's all about building stronger neighborhoods in our city, in our state. Let's all work together to make this a better place for all of us. Now I'd like to turn this over to a good friend of mine, Dean Elwood, the Harvard Kennedy School, to continue the program. David?